On Wednesday last, the Central Statistics Office published comparative figures that highlighted changes in Irish society since 1973, when we joined the European Community. And those figures really highlight a country that has changed beyond recognition. And the statistics paint an interesting story. When Ireland joined in 1973, our average earnings were below every member of the European Union. Today, average earnings in Ireland are the highest among members of the community. Then the population was 3 million people, and that population had been continuously decreasing since 1841. Today it is 5 million. Life expectancy has increased by 10 years. We have full employment, and exports increased in value from £1 billion then a year to now £208 billion every year. 1973, the most popular children's name were Mary and John. That's been replaced by Jack and Emily. Most revealing is that in 1973, 91% of Catholics, which was the majority of religions, was 91% every week. Every week, 91% of the majority of people of this country went to church. And now that figure for Catholic attendance is 31%. And that decrease is reflected in every denomination. It's not just Catholics, all churches feel it. This newfound prosperity has not moved Ireland up the league of the happiest nations, because the happiest countries are Sweden, Norway, Finland, Iceland, and the Nordic countries. There are some minuses, of course. House prices and rents have made home ownership almost impossible for young people. And during the same period, the number of violent deaths has more than tripled. Mental health issues are continuing to increase. And I think that people nowadays are far more tetchy. And the tetchiness often breaks out into anger. The sort of a low-level anger about, and that's not just unique to Ireland. Anger can often manifest itself in violence. Over the summer, there were news reports of many tourists being attacked in our streets. And some of the perpetrators of those attacked were little more than children. And technology means that we can see these acts of violence now. And when we see something, that makes it far more real than just reading about it or hearing it. And obviously, we need to keep a perspective about the amount of violence in our society, because young thugs have always been about the place. And hopefully most of us won't directly experience violence. But the underlying tetchiness in society and in public discourse is pretty obvious to me. If I phone our doctor's surgery, there is a recorded message on it, first to say that abuse of the receptionist will not be tolerated. She's just doing her job, trying to help people make an appointment. Why should she be abused? Shops have the same message. People seem to think that rudeness to shopkeepers is acceptable. So I think it seems a great number of people are angry. I think radio and television programmes are a good example of it. Most discussion programmes, they're called discussion programmes, quickly descend into an incoherent babble of raised voices from all participants. We have four or five people in our studio. They're all trying to talk one another down. And each person tries to shout the other down in order to be heard. I think interviews tend to begin with confrontation from the interviewer, and the interviewee responds with delaying tactics. When you hear a politician say, "I'm glad you asked me that question," you know they have no intention of answering it. For example, on Wednesday, the flooding in Middleton and Cork was really, really very upsetting. On Thursday, of course, the politicians battled their way down to visit Cork to be seen commiserating with the people of Middleton. But on Friday morning, there was an interview with the Minister for Finance, and the interviewer was taking him to task about the delay in getting money to the people in Cork. This was on Friday, the day after the floods. Now, had the minister gone down with a suitcase full of money to hand out to the shopkeepers, that wouldn't have been okay. And as usual, the minister began with, "I'm glad you asked me that question." And where then do you leave Lifeline programme? It's often a perfect example of people venting anger. Every contributor seems to be certain that their view is the correct one. Contributors who keep an open mind can see two sides of the problem are now as rare as hen's teeth. It seems as if the amount of controversy generated in some programs is the criterion for whether or not they are successful. Always kind words will help any situation. Angry words might relieve, vent feelings, but they don't help. And the well-being of individuals should be matter more than any story. This summer, the UK News broke the story that a well-known individual who happened to work for the BBC had paid money to somebody for some naughty photographs. The story created a frenzy of news for weeks. Individuals who also work for the BBC took the earliest opportunity to come online and deny that it wasn't them, they weren't involved. The police were investigating the matter to see had a crime been committed. That didn't close the story down. There was no time left to finish the investigation before the reporters were at it. Eventually, that investigation found that no crime had been committed. No law had been broken. That individual was just extremely foolish and was upset in some way. He had problems. However, that person was broken and possibly still is broken by the experience of that public outing. And who benefited by it? We seem to be desensitized to the feelings of others. There have been instances where material is published on social media that has in complete disregard for the individuals involved. How can anyone think it appropriate to post photographs of a crashed car where somebody had lost their life in that car? What is the point? Recently, following the violent death of a woman in the Midlands, pictures of the crime scene were posted online. The guards were warning parents, please be aware, these pictures are out, your children shouldn't see them. In the UK, two police officers were disciplined for posing with photographs of a double murder situation. They were there to protect those bodies, you know, until the forensic scientists arrived. And they thought it okay to mock them and pose for photographs with them. Needless to say, political discourse is polarized and polarizing. It's never about the benefits or ethics of policies or a way of finding the best solution to the problem. And very often it descends into personalized attacks on opponents, on what they look like and how they behave. Debate is used to demean. And we can't point the fingers at politicians who do that and say they shouldn't be doing that, because politicians want to be elected. And if for a moment they thought that their listeners would disapprove of what they're doing, disapprove of what they're doing, they wouldn't do it because they wouldn't be elected. Dr. Lisa McLean is a psychotherapist, and she said that all this anger she puts down to a normal reaction to stress and a manifestation of suffering. There are signs of public anger. There were signs before the pandemic. But the social isolation of the pandemic has exacerbated existing feelings of isolation and loneliness. You know, technology has given us ways to communicate we never thought possible. But posting or boasting on social media is not communication. It also has the disadvantage that most of our communication doesn't take place in the words we say or write. Most of us communicate most honestly with our body language. So if you're posting things on social media, you don't see the body language that's been reflected back. And we've got to remember, communication has to be a two-way street. It requires one person to speak and the other person to hear what was said. The person communicating needs to feel their voice is heard. But very often in conversation, we use pauses to jump in with our point of view, to criticize the other person, to focus the attention on ourselves. Social isolation plays in to the tetchiness that is so prevalent. And so too does our dissociation with our soul and our lack of self-care. We're not encouraged to care for ourselves, to get the best for ourselves. We look after our teeth and our bodily health, but we don't make time for the soul. Religions have many faults, but their core teaching intended to nourish the soul and the spirit. Religion allows time for reflection. It promotes community and social unity. It teaches that compassion is an obligation, not an optional extra. It also promotes personal responsibility, invites us to reflect on how we are living. It reminds us of our duty to help others. And that it's not okay to blame the government for everything. And it reminds us to say sorry when we do something wrong. You see, many religions made the mistake of putting theology rather than people at the center of their teaching. But when a religion is practiced, it does promote the spiritual, mental, and physical well-being of people. As in that reading, modern therapies tend to address symptoms rather than causes. Spirituality cares for the essence of our humanity, which is our soul. We have to remember too that anger hurts everyone, and its effects spreads like ripples on a pond. A person on the receiving end of anger becomes bad-tempered. Anger also harms the angry person. It raises our blood pressure. It increases our heart rate. Anger clouds compassion. And that compassion is the only solution to anger. Compassion for others and compassion for ourselves. We have to remember to be compassionate to ourselves when we are angry, and to those we might hurt. Anger, too, is the parent of hatred. Tony Brady and I were chatting on Friday evening after we left the synagogue, and he was saying that after 9/11, the Vietnamese monk Thich Nhat Hanh was asked how America could move forward. And he said that America needed to ask itself the question, what are we doing that is generating so much hatred among these young men? America then needed to acknowledge the anger and the suffering of those people. But that's the difficult thing to do. And usually we take the knee-jerk reaction of reacting with violence. And that violence causes more anger and more hurt and more pain. And it's just a cycle, and one we can only interrupt by stop being anger. We need to take that step to say, why are people so angry? When you notice anger in yourself or others, just take a moment to pause and ask, why are they angry? I get angry back. It's not going to solve the matter. The only solution to anger is compassion. Compassion to ourselves. Compassion is the answer to every problem, really.